Hello, class. Here we are getting ready for the quiz over the causes of the American Civil War. The first six people are figures that somehow impacted the bringing about of the American Civil War, so I'll be going over the first six. Frederick Douglass, he was a former slave and ended up becoming an abolitionist. Remember, abolitionist is a person who wanted to destroy or abolish slavery. Frederick Douglass, what's key to know about him, besides being my personal hero, he chose to pick up the pen and try to reason and persuade people, specifically in the North, to stand against slavery. One of the most famous speeches, which we're going to be going over tomorrow in class, is called What the 4th of July Means to the Negro. And we'll be going over that tomorrow. So that's Frederick Douglass in a nutshell. John Brown, he's sort of the opposite end of the spectrum regarding abolitionism compared to Fred Douglass. John Brown believed that the only way that slavery could end was basically through violence. And what he wanted to do was he wanted to start a rebellion, a slave revolt in the South, to have the slaves rise up and basically claim their freedom and the consequence killing their slave owners. So he started at Harper's Ferry, Virginia. This is where the Potomac and I think the Delaware River met. And what he attempted to do was to basically take a bunch of arms. And in the process, Robert E. Lee and a few other Union or federal troops put him down. And John Brown was put on trial and hung shortly thereafter. But he was an abolitionist. He, rather than using reason, used the sword. Sojourner Truth was a former female slave. She was a slave in New York. New York abolished slavery. She became free. She ended up writing as well as giving speeches about why slavery should be abolished, but she also stood up for women's rights as well. The speech you're going to be reading tomorrow, or you may have a choice to read about her, is the speech Ain't I a Woman by Sojourner Truth. William Lloyd Garrison, he is another abolitionist. He was a white person in this mix. There was a lot of white people who were abolitionists. He wrote an abolitionist newspaper. Tomorrow you are going to be reading a speech by him as well. But just to know that he is one of the most well-known white abolitionists. Going on to Dred Scott. Dred Scott, he was a slave in Missouri. His master was a U.S. Army doctor, so because he was in the Army, he kind of had to move around a lot. What ended up happening, his master ended up taking him, Dred, to Illinois, and also they lived in Minnesota for a few years. And because he lived in this free area, Illinois and Minnesota, they were both free, Dred Scott argued that he should be free, so he sued his master for his freedom. And as you know from the Dred Scott ruling, that was kind of quelled. He lost the case, and I'll explain that more later down on the paper. Abraham Lincoln, he was a senator from Illinois. He ran for president. His biggest competitor was a guy named Stephen Douglas. Basically, with Abraham Lincoln, he was a known abolitionist. People knew that he was against slavery, but this was sort of like when he was running for president, the United States was sort of on this verge or this threat that the South would actually secede or break away from the Union. And Abraham Lincoln vowed that his main goal was to preserve the Union, not to end slavery. But Southerners, of course, didn't believe him. So they seceded anyway, and Abraham Lincoln presidency, his inauguration, was seen as sort of the break, the straw that broke the donkey's back. It was the final straw for a lot of Southerners. They believed that the North was out, Northerners and abolitionists were out to basically wreck their economy and their way of life. So they seceded. Going down, identify the terms and their impact toward leading to the Civil War. First thing was the Missouri Compromise. Obviously, the North and South, free states and slave states, were trying to compromise, come to terms and grips about whether this new land, Missouri and Maine, was going to be free or slave. They compromised. Missouri was a slave state. Maine was a free state. And also out of this, what you had was the Missouri Compromise Line. It was drawn on the southern border of Missouri all the way across the United States. Anything north of the line was free. Anything south was slave. Also out of that, you know, slave owners could basically send their slave catchers up north to find their fugitive slaves that ran away. Compromise of 1850. In terms of what's important to know about these two things, about the Compromise of 1850, it was a kind of debate whether California was going to be a free state or a slave state. The Missouri line actually divided the state in half. The result was the Compromise of 1850. California became a free state. However, the Southerners got something out of it too. They got what was the Fugitive Slave Law. Make sure you are familiar with that, and I'll go over that later on, but that's what they got out of it. So there was the compromise. And neither the Missouri Compromise nor the Compromise of 1850, they never really settled the problem, because there was just reoccurring issues that always brought up more debate, more discussion, more arguments. And this case came to be, the next law passed by Congress was the Kansas-Nebraska Act. In this particular law, Kansas-Nebraska, there was a debate, is it going to be free or slave? It was north of the Missouri Compromise line. However, the decision was, a senator named Stephen Douglas said, hey, let's let the people of the state decide. Let's spread democracy. I mean, that's kind of his way of spreading democracy. Letting people decide whether they should enslave others, but whatever the case, the idea was allow the people to decide. So that was the Kansas-Nebraska Act. People get to decide whether their new state is going to be free or slave. Now, what this ended up happening, a bunch of pro-slavery and anti-slavery people ended up flocking like mad over to the Kansas-Nebraska. So you had like these pro-slavery people from Missouri. You had these anti-slavery people from like Indiana, Illinois, and Ohio. They're moving in, and what their goal is to basically churn the tide of the election to try to fix the decision. So they ended up moving their neighbor. You had these neighboring communities. Some are pro-slavery, some are anti-slavery, and what ends up happening is the Bleeding Kansas, sort of like a precursor to the American Civil War. And pro-slavery people, anti-slavery people started slaughtering one another, conducting raids on each other's communities. You know, I talked about John Brown, how he was the guy who took the machete and broke into a cabin's of a pro-slavery household, and you know, he murdered 5 innocent people. Moving on, abolitionism. It is the idea or the movement against slavery to ban slavery in the United States. You know, you have your abolitionists like Fred Douglas, John Brown, Sojourner Truth, Garrison, Abraham Lincoln. These are all people who identified as being abolitionists. Cotton gin was the invention that helped spread slavery throughout the United States. It was the device that extracted the burrs and seeds from the cotton balls, and it increased the production of cotton. Cotton was actually considered a cash crop at the time, and since it increased the production, it spread like wildfire. Slavery ended up increasing because of it. Free labor north versus slave labor south. In regards to this, you know, both the North and the South wanted to spread their type of labor. Free labor, remember those images, you know, people in the factory, child laborers, and slave labor, you know, slaves getting beaten, slaves being sold, auction blocks, so on and so forth. Both of these sides use the evils of each other to kind of change the debate, to persuade others to their side, you know. Free labor, you know, it's all wage labor. Slave labor, they don't get paid, but you know, they have their pros and cons with them. All right, states' rights. In regards to states' rights, the states' rights is actually you find it in the Bill of Rights. It is the 10th Amendment of the Bill of Rights, and this is the belief of the Southerners that whatever is not written in the Constitution, that particular power goes toward the states. So, there's nothing in the Constitution either prohibiting or accepting slavery. So the question is, who should have the authority to determine the slave question, the slave issue? And the Southerners said, it's our right. It's our right. There's nothing in the Constitution prohibiting slavery. It is the state's rights to determine whether they want to be free or slave. And this is actually what kind of influenced the Kansas-Nebraska Act. Let the people decide. Well, when time came that they wanted to secede from the Union, they actually used the argument of states' rights as to why they were able to secede or break away from the Union, hence starting the Civil War. So states' rights, key, important. I'm going to go over it more later on. Abraham Lincoln's inauguration, that was, like I said, it was the straw that broke the donkey's back. People, Southerners, were afraid that the North was going to ban slavery. So they used that argument of states' rights to say, you know, we're breaking away. We're going to start our own country. We're now the Confederate States of America, not the United States. The Dred Scott decision, the argument broke down into three separate issues. In terms of the actual decision, the first one dealt with citizenship. They said that no African American or black person at that time, what they would have called black person, no black person is an actual citizen of the United States. So therefore, they have no rights. They have no rights under our Constitution. They are not protected. The second one dealt with property. Slaves are property. That is a natural right. It's protected by the Constitution. So no one's allowed to take away your property. And that's including the government, the Senate, or the Congress. So they couldn't pass laws to prohibit it. And last, and it kind of blends in, the power of Congress. Congress, since government's not allowed to take away government, they're not allowed to ban slaves or slavery, because slaves are property. They're not citizens, they're property. They are not people, they're property. They're nothing more than like a plow or a cow. Last, the Fugitive Slave Law of 1850. What this law allowed, Southerner slave owners to do, if a slave ran away, they were allowed to go north to retrieve their slave. However, there was just a ton of consequences with this. First, if a slave catcher wanted a northerner's help to catch a slave, the northerner could not refuse. Even if they were abolitionists, they could not refuse. So this angered the people in the North, even people who weren't really strong abolitionists. It angered them as well, being forced to help catch slaves. They didn't see it as being ethical or moral. Secondly, it kind of got out of hand. What slave catchers end up doing, rather than spending a lot of time trying to find their specific slave, they just found someone that resembled their slave. So if like you had a tall African-American slave that ran away, they just found a tall African-American living in the North. He may be free, he may be a runaway former slave, didn't matter. They caught him. The slave had no due process. They had no way to defend themselves to say whether they were actually free or not. There was a lot of occasions, a lot of situations, like cities like Cincinnati, Boston, New York City, where a bunch of free-born African-Americans were actually kidnapped and then sold down south as slaves. So this angered, infuriated the North. It made the South happy. So here's your study guide. I hope I helped you out. If you have any questions, make sure you ask. Good luck. Bye.